Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic, who joins us weekly and who bravely goes out to movie theaters, which we are so excited about. The films are The Trial of the Chicago Seven, Oliver Sacks, His Own Life, and Martin Eden. We were just giving you lots of credit for going to, you know, taking your life in your hands, going to movie theaters, and the discovery that, in fact, you're going to private screenings. That was a real point.
This week, I have in recent weeks gone to the movies more than once. Yes, gone to movie theaters. And again, as I always emphasize, I go to afternoon shows and I'm usually the only person in the entire auditorium. So I am so socially distanced. This week, however, these three films, I saw them all streaming. Anybody can do it. They're right there for all to access. And so and in each of these cases, I do recommend that because these are three good movies I have this week. And they're all brand new. So let's begin with The Trial of the Chicago Seven, which is a new movie written and directed by Aaron Sorkin, who is best known for his television work, but who is just one of today's really acclaimed writer-directors. And The Trial of the Chicago Seven is a movie, a very political movie, about exactly what the title suggests. Back in 1968, when the Democratic National Convention was taking place in Chicago, there was a whole lot of ruckus, and there was everything from violent ruckus to just noisy ruckus to peaceful ruckus. And I guess here and there, there was non-ruckus, but there was a lot of ruckus. It was a very, very tumultuous political convention. And what this movie does is it tells the stories of, it involves the stories of seven people who were arrested for various reasons connected with all that ruckus raising. And so that's what we've got here. So it is definitely a docudrama. It is in no way a documentary, and it is in some ways it's very well done, and in other ways it's sort of contrived, but the cast is certainly excellent. This is not one of these movies where you can watch a movie about a historical subject, in this case not ancient history, just 1968, but it's not one of these things where you can sort of forget you're watching just sort of, you know, reconstructions and recreations and people doing fictionalized versions of things, because the cast is really famous in this movie, and I'm just going to mention a few of the people who play important roles. Let's see, one person who's obviously very important, it's not actually one of the most prominent roles, but it's way up there, is Frank Langella, who plays the judge, Judge Julius Hoffman, who presides over, the movie is largely, not entirely, but largely a courtroom drama. A lot of the ruckus in the movie takes place in the courtroom. And the judge did what I think was universally regarded as a pretty bad job of presiding over all of these people were intent on getting themselves noticed and raising publicity for their cause, so they caused a lot of trouble in the courtroom as well as outside. So anyway, Frank Langella is very, very good as the long-suffering Judge Julius Hoffman, who presides over the whole thing. As some of the defendants, we have Eddie Redmayne as Tom Hayden, Alex Sharp as Rennie Davis. The infamous duo, they're not really infamous, but Abbie Hoffman and Jerry Rubin, the founders of the Yippies, the Youth International Party, who were pranksters as much as political protesters, are played by Sacha Baron Cohen, who also has a new movie, by the way, coming out that we'll be probably talking about soon, plays Abbie Hoffman, and Jeremy Strong, who is so prominent in that excellent series Succession, plays Jerry Rubin. John Carroll Lynch plays the somewhat older and dumpier David Dellinger. And then I got to mention Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, who plays Bobby Seale, who caused so much ruckus in the courtroom that he was bound and gagged, one of the most famous facets of that trial of the Chicago Seven back in 1968. And I'll just mention a couple of others who are not defendants. Mark Rylance is just excellent, that fine British actor playing the very American radical left attorney, William Kunstler. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is excellent as one of the other people who is not on trial, etc. Michael Keaton, by the way, plays Ramsey Clark, the recently retired attorney general. So a very, very marvelous cast, and it's a very involving and fun movie to watch, even at the same time that it's getting across some really serious points about recent American history. And a lot of those points have real resonance in today's America as well. Now, I have to say the biggest problem with this movie is the very end. It ends with an overblown, overdone, triumphalist courtroom scene where everybody is cheering the outcome of the trial and the judge cannot regain order in the courtroom. It's just nonsense. It goes on and on. Any judge can clear a courtroom without too much trouble. They have people called bailiffs. So it's just ridiculous to see the judge pounding his gavel on and on, yelling, "Keep quiet, order in the courtroom," and nobody paying any attention. I didn't believe it for a minute. I believe that something like that happened, but I don't believe it happened like this. So the end, I think, is very, very bogus, and is an attempt to gin up a kind of enthusiasm in the audience, which the movie has not honestly quite ginned up on its own. That big caveat aside, the last maybe 3 or 4 minutes of the movie, that aside, it's a good movie, it's an entertaining movie, and it's a movie about real history, and I think that everybody ought to watch it, The Trial of the Chicago Seven. Second movie is a genuine documentary, Oliver Sacks, His Own Life. And it is, of course, about the very great neurologist, Dr. Oliver Sacks. And it's basically the whole story of his life, as told in a lot of cases by him. It has interviews with him, but it also, of course, has a lot of archival footage and so forth going back over his life. And we find out about how he was a very unusual youth. He was obviously brilliant, but he had not much in the way of discipline. One thing the movie didn't quite explain to me is just how this person who was not very disciplined as a kid, or in fact as an adolescent or a young adult, managed to do things like, go to medical school and all that. But he did, and he ultimately became, of course, an extremely famous neurologist in all kinds of ways. But we find out about his life and about the lack of discipline that he had for quite a while in his earlier life, in his younger life. He was using drugs. That's one of the things that fueled his accomplishment. He was using drugs to do, some of his academic work and so forth, and then later some of his medical work just to keep himself going and going and going, when sometimes he wouldn't be going and going on serious work. Sometimes he'd be jumping on his motorcycle and going for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours just stoked up on drugs. Anyway, an unusual life. Eventually he settles down and he becomes a real famous MD. And he's famous actually not so much simply for his medical work as a neurologist. Of course, he's mostly famous as a writer. He's written quite a number of books. My gosh, I've certainly read a few of them. Some of the more famous ones include Awakenings, which was made into a movie many years ago, The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat, some of which was actually adapted to the stage many years ago. Anyway, many, many important books. And he's important not only as a writer of books that in some cases being real bestsellers. I mean, imagine that, books by a neurologist about neurology that become bestsellers. But he's famous for that mainly because he did something kind of controversial for a while. He revived the old tradition of the case history. Case histories have been around for a very long time. One physician in a related field to Sacks, who was very, very famous and important for case histories, was, of course, Sigmund Freud. And case histories are just detailed accounts of actual cases. And some people say, well, that's not so important. It's not theory. It's not hard science. But Oliver Sacks did feel that what he did was extremely important because it was, for one thing, humanizing the field, letting people who are not specialists understand the human meanings of both the illnesses that he is treating and the ways in which he is treating those illnesses and so forth and so on. But also it's humanizing the patients and just generally bringing more public awareness to a field in ways that that pure scientific, hard-edged, facts and figures and statistics and so forth, science can't really do. So he was celebrated, I think, rightly for reviving the tradition of the case history. And also one more important thing about the case history, and this is very much brought out in the movie, he would say, right, I'm not a theorist. I'm providing the kind of evidence that theorists have to have. I'm the one who goes out and makes the observations, and then they can do their hard science and develop their theory and their hypotheses and so forth. So all of this is, I think, quite fascinatingly discussed in the movie. One more angle of the film is that Oliver Sacks was gay, and he realizes fairly early in his life, among other things, it caused a ferocious rift with his mother. He was British, although although he eventually emigrated to the United States. Ferocious Rift, his mother, who was a brilliant woman in her own right, both of his parents were brilliant. She could not accept this for quite a while, and so that was a trauma in his life, and eventually he became asexual for decades and decades. All of this is very, very interesting, and is very tastefully but forthrightly dealt with in the movie. So again, it's a movie with a lot of angles, a lot of very human angles about everything from Oliver Sacks' education to his sexuality to his becoming a success to the controversy surrounding his books. And also you get little glimpses into the actual science that he did and his tremendous ability to be compassionate toward people with just devastating conditions in a lot of cases. He was very, very involved, for example. His book Awakenings is largely about his work with patients who suffered what was known at the time as sleeping sickness. They simply could not function. It was as if they were awake but asleep. And the tremendous compassion he had for people who were just given up. We can't communicate with these people is what most folks said. And they were basically just warehoused. And Oliver Sacks came in and managed to really strike up relationships with people and do tremendously important work, which in that case turned out to have a very disappointing denouement. The ultimate result was not what they had hoped with the kind of treatment he was offering. Anyway, all of this is in the movie. Oliver Sacks, his own life, is very much his story, and it's really interesting. My favorite of these three movies is the last one I want to talk about today, Jill Martin Eden, which is directed by the very fine Italian director Pietro Marcello. And even though it's based on a very American novel by Jack London, this is an Italian movie in Italian, but it's directed by this really gifted filmmaker who brings elements of documentary in, although the movie is primarily very much fiction, based again on this Jack London novel. Now, the Jack London novel, when I started it, I've read it, I was expecting more stuff like, The Call of the Wild, which, by the way, was made into an excellent film recently as well. You know, stuff where people are going out and facing the natural world and huge challenges from ice and snow and the sea and so forth. And in fact, Martin Eden, the main character, is a sailor who has returned home from the sea. He's still very young, but that's what he's done for a living. He's worked very hard on ships. But the movie turns out, well, the novel and the movie turn out to be something about something really different. He wants to become a writer. At the very beginning, he meets a wealthy family and he is smitten by the young woman of the family and he decides he wants to be educated like them. He wants to know things the way they do. He wants to be able to work with words the way the writers he starts to admire have done. And so he sets out to become a writer. And in both the novel and the film, he writes and writes and writes and he tries to educate himself and does educate himself by reading and reading and reading. Now, the novel is very interiorized, and a lot of it is literally Martin writing and writing and writing and Martin reading and reading and reading, and the incidents don't take place all that often. The movie is more, because movies have to be, more exterior, and so we have more detail of the circumstances of Martin's life and the grinding poverty that he lives through. I mentioned he writes and writes and writes, but he cannot sell anything. So he's writing and writing and writing and being rejected and rejected and rejected and writing and writing and writing and being rejected, etc. Along the way, meeting other people, being influenced by other people, trying to strike out his own way, trying to figure out how you actually do sell things and become successful as a writer. Now, both the novel and the film have a fascinating ending, which took me completely by surprise when I read the novel, and I'm certainly not going to give it away here. The story comes out very, very, very differently from how I had expected. The same thing happens in the movie, although the movie is softened somewhat. It takes sort of the angular edges off the ending and presents a somewhat different version of it, even though the actual sort of outcome is basically the same. And I actually like the way the novel ends better than I like the way the movie ends. But that said, the movie is absolutely marvelous. It's a little bit long. It's a little over 2 hours. So is the trial of the Chicago 7. But it just kept me riveted every single step of the way. The Italian actor who plays Martin, his name is Luca Marinelli. He is just excellent. And again, we have this fictional story with very vividly acted characters and a lot of detail of environment and setting and place and time. But at the same time, we have these very, very, very well done psychological portraits of the people who are watching and documentary elements woven in here. They're documentary footage, some of it altered so that it really looks almost stylized, almost abstract in some ways. Now, one more thing I want to mention about the movie Martin Eden is that the timeline is deliberately scrambled. A lot of times we seem to be in the first half of the 20th, well, in the early 20th century, certainly certainly before World War II, which appears to be coming very rapidly. But at other times, we see people with TV sets, and we hear Europop music on the soundtrack. So the timeline is deliberately scrambled. I think this is an effort to make the movie seem more timeless, that we're not watching an artifact from the early part of the 20th century, that we're watching something which applies to our time as well. I just found this another element of the film that gave it a strong artistic quality, a kind of a mystery that appealed very much to me. So Martin Eden is a story about literature, is a story about love, it's a story about striving to become successful, and I found it just fascinating. I think it's one of the very best movies of this year, and before too long I'll be doing a 10 best list for 2020, and I would be surprised if Martin Eden were not on it. So that is my semi-documentary, semi-fictionalized story this week, Jill.
As well as a tease, thank you very much, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films. The Trial of the Chicago 7, Oliver Sacks, His Own Life, and Martin Eden.